concluded life was his awakening, his understanding, his insight into the ultimate reality, into truth with a capital T.
How's it going out there? Right now it is March 19th. And I just got finished doing a teaching over Zoom for the good people down at the Albuquerque Insight. So I'm going to post that here for you, but I just wanted to say a few words. I know that shit's real crazy out there right now with this whole situation with this coronavirus. And I know that many of you are probably at home and probably scared, concerned, worried, and probably a whole range of dynamic feelings about this. I held these feelings myself, and I hope that everybody's okay out there. I hope you enjoy this talk, and hope to see you live and living color at some point. And until then, I hope you find some ease in the silent moments of your life and take this time to practice and to reflect on what's actually really important to you. Hope you enjoy the talk. Take care. So I have a lot on my mind this evening, of course. I'm sure you do as well. I wanted to, because we were able to meet last week, some of you were here, some of you weren't, I did speak a little bit about fear. I just want to highlight that a little bit, that probably to some degree we're all sharing in this universal experience of fear and uncertainty and just not really knowing much of anything, and whatever we're being told probably would... some degree of intelligence, being suspicious of the information that we get, and really actually having to find our way through this. And as I said at the beginning of the meditation, you know, we talk about practicing, and you know, sometimes I think to myself, well, when is the concert? You know, when is the performance? When is the game? And I think that we're in the game right now. This is it. This is a really... I think, rich time and an important opportunity for us to really reflect. And when I say reflect, really what I just mean is this willingness to just be honest with ourselves about, you know, what's going on, how we're experiencing what's going on, and how can we use our practice of Dharma, how can we use our Dharma practice to help us get through the day, to help us get through the hour, to help us get through the NPR newscast. As they like to say in certain circles, especially in the recovery world I'm from, this is really when the rubber meets the road. You know, and it's hard enough to practice when things are going well. It's hard enough to practice when things are easy or easy-ish. So I want to talk about a couple things. One is I want to talk about... Dharma as a practice, which is sort of what we do here. Dharma as a refuge. And Dharma as a raft. The Buddha talking about the practice as being a raft. But first I want to read this. I think I put in the chat, there should be a link to this if you want to check it out, but I'll read it to you. There is a great book here written by a Thai forest monk. I don't know if you can see this. Ajahn Pasano and Ajahn Amaro, called The Island. It's a great book. I think you can usually get it for free online. Called The Island, and it's the Buddha's teachings on Nibbana. But this, I just want to read this very short sutta that the Buddha actually, one of the last things that he said before he died to his students, who were, of course, upset and weeping and very scared and concerned about what they're going to do without his presence and his teachings. And he says this, I'll translate it a little bit. Instead of saying monks, I'll just say students, because we're students more than we're monks. But he says, students, be islands unto yourselves. Be your own refuge, having no other refuge. Let the Dhamma, let the practice be an island and a refuge to you, having no other refuge. Those who are islands unto themselves should investigate the very heart of things, the very nature of experience. What is the source of sorrow, of lamentation, of grief and despair? How do these experiences arise? Here, students, the uninstructed worldling, the non-practitioner, change occurs in this person's life and things become different. On account of this change and difference, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair arise. But seeing clearly the body's impermanence, to see the changing nature, the ability of all things, its waning, its ceasing, the student says, formerly as now, all bodies are impermanent, all bodies are unsatisfactory and subject to change. Seeing this as it really is, seeing things as they really are with clear insight, the student abandons all sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. They are not worried about their abandonment. They are unworried about things as they are, living at ease, and thus living at ease. One is said to be assuredly delivered. So what does all that mean? You know, sometimes we talk about these three refuges of Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, which is somewhat talked about. But in his final address and his really final teachings, is the Buddha says this very, I think, poignant, to some degree scary statement of like, we all have to figure this out for ourselves. You know, when it comes down to it, when things come down to the final days, things as they are, really the only thing that we can rely on is whatever practice and whatever internal experience of refuge that we've developed. And when we do that, we become an island unto ourselves. We become a place of safety, a place of refuge in the midst of all the ongoing change and whirlwind of experiences that we find. And this is, I think, a bittersweet reflection. Because when he speaks about the Dharma, which is actually a kind of a word that's somewhat impossible to translate in English, for probably good reason, he's saying really actually the only true refuge is our Dharma, is what we've known to be true in our own direct experience. And he, a couple of ways he talks about it. Last time I was in Albuquerque, if you were there, I did a talk on the Noble Quest, which is one of the few places where the Buddha really talks about what the Dharma is, this Dharma that he awoke to. He says he didn't wake to it through thinking and logic and reason. He said that it's very quiet, it's excellent, it's inviting, it's everly present, it's immediate. It's a kind of sensibility about things. It's a kind of intelligence, an ethical intelligence, an emotional intelligence. It's a really a way of seeing things as they are. But then he says towards the end, the bittersweet part of it, is he says it's hard to see and it's difficult to see. It's hard to awaken to and it's difficult to awaken to. Now, I've been reading this sutta for 2 decades. It's one of the teachings that I'm mildly obsessed with. But when you look at the Pali, when he says it's hard to see and difficult to see, hard to awaken to, difficult to awaken to, I thought that meant, I've always thought that meant, well, it's hard to see because you have to be like a really good meditator, like the Buddha. You have to be this advanced practitioner. And if your meditation skills were really good, it wouldn't be so hard to see. It would be easy to see. So I always thought it was about ability. I also thought it was about intelligence, about like, well, it's hard to comprehend and you have to be super intelligent and super wise. So I thought it was, historically, I thought this Dharma that I'm trying to see, that I'm trying to wake up to, was something that I needed to be really smart and I needed to be a really advanced meditator. And if I was able to do that, then I would be able to see this Dharma. And to give you a little insight into my neuroticism, I don't see myself that way. You know, I don't see myself as this wise, intelligent, totally skilled meditator. I see myself sort of this person who's just not just struggled with the practice, but just struggled with life. To some degree, feel like I struggled with life a little bit more than I should have. But when I really started to dig into this hard, difficult to see thing, the Pali term is actually do-dasi. And do, you probably will, some of you who have studied this stuff will see, do is also the same prefix as dukkha. So it's not necessarily that it's hard to see, it's that it's painful to see. It's scary. It pulls the rug out from underneath us. So it's really hard and difficult in the sense that, like right now, we're having to come to terms with some very real conditions that we don't have any control over. There's a lot of uncertainty about them. We're just not really sure. And that is actually part of being awake. That is really part of this idea of a Dharma. So in some sense, we could say that the perspective of Dharma, thinking about it as a perspective, is really this wide open view of seeing the beautiful and tragic world that we all live in. This beautiful, tragic world of being a human being, that it's both. And right now, the current song of the day is in a minor key. You know, that we are all very much, I feel like the E minor chord ringing through my mind and body right now, currently, if I'm honest. And there is some wisdom in that. That's important to acknowledge. We don't want to stick our head in the sands and pretend like everything's going to be okay. We also don't want to, we want to try to find this way of practicing so that we're not suppressing the fear and the sadness and the tragedy and any of that stuff that's coming up right now for many of us. But we also don't want to indulge it either. You know, we don't want to pretend like everything's okay and, you know, go about the world as if nothing's wrong. But we also maybe don't want to go buy 4 pallets of toilet paper from Costco either. You know, there's a way in which we want to try to have a balance in all these different things that are happening. So here we can see the Dharma as a perspective, as a way of trying to come to terms with things actually as they are. And because of change, it's sometimes things are going well, sometimes they're not going so well. And it's a very poignant time for us to just have to reflect on these kinds of things. Which also, for me, gives a big prompting of compassion. And really, I think part of what makes it hard or painful to see is actually having to own and having to recognize that we do have a shared and embodied humanity, and that there is this idea we are interdependent. And I don't want to go too far down this trail, but I do want to highlight that the current conditions that we're in right now are really good for climate change. You know, the planet is getting a little bit of a breath of fresh air. Not a lot of planes in the sky. Oil production's down. The military industrial machine complex is having to slow down and coming to a halt. Maybe there's something about all of this that actually we're not necessarily acknowledging. And maybe many people who are not of a contemplative type of framework. I think that as a society and a culture and as a global community, we're kind of forced into a retreat kind of mode. That we're kind of, all of us, we're, you know, retreating in our homes. We're actually being forced to come into contact with some type of contemplative framework. You know, where there's some downtime, some things not going on that we're necessarily used to. We're having to really confront this global crisis, and it's really hard, even for the biggest deniers of the universe right now. I think that probably people are having to start to wake up a little bit, and I think that there's something about that that could really be good for humanity. I could be wrong. That's maybe my hopeless optimism coming through, but I do feel that there are factors involved that are beyond our comprehension, and to put a negative spin on everything is not always the best method. And so then this comes to this, okay, so, you know, if you're with me so far, how do we find refuge in all of this? I'll put that in there, the Noble Quest, Majjhima Nikaya 26. I'll talk more about that at the end. I did reference the Noble Quest, so just some questions are coming up. And so this is, I think, for me, like, I've been, and I'll be totally honest with you, I've been basically in this all day. You know, there's been times today where I was super pissed and super angry about what's going on, totally scared about what's going on, feeling totally hopeful and positive about what's going on. Like, I can't keep up with my own mind right now. It's just, I go from doom and despair to hope. My mind is just, I don't know if you've been noticing this, but I can't pin it down. It's just so fast and so quick. And so, you know, how do we find a sense of refuge within our own islands? It's almost like, you know, like even on the screen, we're all got our little tiny box island, right? We're all on our own little island right now. And, you know, we can connect with each other. But ultimately, when we get off the screen and you put your head down on the pillow tonight, all you have is that. That's what you have. You have your body, your mind, your aggregate system, your feelings, your perceptions, your emotions. You know, you're in your own autonomous experience. And I know that for me, when I'm confronted by this, it really puts my faith and the practice to the test. It puts whatever practice and work I've done in the past, you know, it really puts me in a position where I have to be super honest with myself about, does this practice even work? Am I really okay? How scared am I really? How much hope do I have really? And this idea, sometimes I use this word reflection a lot, but I like it because to me it just means like mindfulness. We talk about mindfulness a lot, right? Mindfulness is a mirror. And it's in a perfect world, mindfulness just reflects back to us what's going on internally. And I don't know about you, but when I look in the reflection of my present time experience, I don't always like what I see, you know? And so how honest can I be in the moment about what I'm being confronted with, what's going on for me? And so this is just a really good time, I mean, for me and I think for all of us, to really have to sit with these bigger questions. And come to terms with some bigger questions that we sort of know in the back of our mind, but are really having to, you know, did anybody have a hard 5 minutes today? I'm sure everybody did at one point or another. And that brings me really to this, so we can think of the Dharma as a perspective, as a kind of framework for experience, which is good. We can think of it as a refuge, as a present time dwelling, as a practice that we can hold, that we can embody. And then this other sutta, which is oftentimes called the simile of the raft. I want to talk about that for the rest of the night here. I'll read it to you. Let's see if I can find it. I think I sent it to myself. Let's see here. Oh, yes. So the Buddha talks about, you know, this raft idea is so interesting because I don't know about you, but I can't necessarily rely on the practice I did tomorrow. And, you know, what worked yesterday and last year to get me through hard times isn't necessarily going to work now. Because we always find ourselves in very particular, very specific and very personal conditions, and these conditions change a lot. You know, you can't live on yesterday's bread, you know? And sometimes I think we forget that. But I'll read this. It's just a short sutta. It's called The Simile of the Raft, and this is the Buddha talking. He says, suppose a person were traveling along a path, and they would see a great expanse of water. With the near shore, the shore that they're standing on is risky and dubious and scary and full of concern. But the further shore, the shore on the other side, is secure, free from risk, and is safe. But as they look around, nor do they see a ferry boat or a bridge going from this shore to the other shore. That person would think, and it would occur to them, this is a great expanse of water, with the near shore scary, dubious, and risky, and the farther shore safe, secure, and free from risk. But there's no boat, there's no ferryman, there's no way to get across. We would think to ourselves, one would think to themselves, what if I were to gather grass, twigs, branches, and leaves, and having bound them together, I could make a raft. Were I to cross over this river to safety on the other shore, independent of this raft, having made an effort with my hands and feet. Having done this, having crossed the shore, so we're on the shore to the other side, one might think to themselves after we get across the other shore with this raft, how useful has this raft been for me? For it was independent of this raft that, making an effort with my hands and feet, I have crossed over to safety onto the further shore. Why don't I, having hoisted it on my head, carrying it on my back, go wherever I like? Should I take this raft with me? And the Buddha says, would the person carrying this raft around with them be doing what should be done with the raft? So as the Buddha loves to do, as you can see in his teaching, lots of repetition and lots of questioning, Socratic method. But the idea is, if we are, right now we could say we're on the risky, sort of scary shore, but when we use the raft, when we use the Dharma raft to get to the other side, to traverse the tricky waters, do we carry the raft around with us forever? Or do we leave the raft and continue? It's his question, and if you go on to read it, he basically says that the raft is a vehicle to get from one place to the other, that we don't want to hold on to it and cling to it. We actually want to let it go. And so when I think about, this is one of my favorite teachings, actually, is because it's a really great analogy for, we've all had difficult times in our life. We've all been through some hard shit, right? And what got us through that, when we get through it to the other side, we don't necessarily want to be carrying these rafts around with us all the time. It worked in that particular, specific, perhaps personal experience. But when we reach the shore of safety, when we reach the other side, we let the raft go. You know, we let go of the raft. And then, of course, as we know, we travel on and then we come to another expanse of water and we need another raft and on life goes. But one of the things that can happen to practitioners that I know I've been guilty of in the past is my Dharma practice can start to become sort of this belief system or these dogmatic ideas that I sort of cling to in my mind. Like, for example, I know that from my Buddhist training that compassion is the great antidote to suffering. I know that, but I don't always know how to do that. I don't always know how to build the compassion raft. And the compassion raft that worked 10 years ago might not be the same one that's going to work today, so it's best that I don't be humping it around with me everywhere I go. So I think part of the reflection is we find ourselves in current, present time experience. What are the twigs and the branches that you have lying around? What are the leaves? What are the bits of trash? What is it that you have actually available to you that you can use to build a raft, to build a practice, to build something that's going to carry you through the day, through the hard 5 minutes, through the next 3 months, through the financial insecurity, through all of the different uncertainties? You know, is that we actually, I find that I'm actually in this moment with you. I'm actually having, all day I've been trying to construct a raft. Because I'm facing a type of shore that I've never been on before. You know, I've never been in this experience. I've never been in, you know, I have a small child downstairs. I've never been in any sort of scary global situation with a child. It's all always just been me by myself. A lot easier that way. So we have to, I think, be honest about trying to draw on whatever inner resources, which is a word we would use in a clinical framework, which I think is a great terminology. What are the inner resources that we currently have that are going to allow us to get through? And it's not just sitting quietly by ourselves, meditating on a cushion. You know, it's relating to our loved ones. It's being smart or clever or realistic about our finances, about trying to manage the fear, about trying to actually see, is there an opportunity for generosity? Is there something I could actually do? Do I have resources? What kind of resources do I have? You know, can I help somebody else build a raft? Or is it just, you know, am I going to live in this individualistic world that we live in? I was like, well, I got plenty of toilet paper, so all y'all are on your own. You know, that's kind of the American framework, right? But, you know, what can we share? You know, is there ways we can connect with people online? To some degree, I think it's like in these situations, we almost have to be just a little bit clever about how we go about this kind of stuff. And to me, it's all Dharma practice. You know, it's not just, you know, I don't know about you. Did anybody have a long day on the ranch? You know, kind of like it's 8 o'clock now here, and it's like, you know, I haven't been out of the house all day. I went outside twice to feed my donkeys and let the dog out. And I watched lots and lots of Clifford the Big Red Dog with my children, which is not a dynamic show. I could sing you the entire theme song right now. It's just like being like, okay, like one more episode of Clifford the Big Red Dog. I guess this is what's happening right now. You know, and just that cabin fever. We got a lot of snow today too. I thought I was going to go outside and walk around my land. I got 5 inches of snow. I just got slush and grime everywhere. It's just been like, so just trying to, you know, in any given moment be like, okay, like what's the right thing? How can I be in this moment right now? You know, how can I really, really, in what ways is my practice informing me, or in what ways is fear and worry and these kind of afflictive, destructive parts of my mind dictating the current view that I have? In moment to moment, it's like every moment has its view, right? And I've had everything from doom and despair to hope. I mean, I've had it all today. I've experienced all 52 mental factors of the Abhidharma have gone through my mind at one point today, and I don't know which one to trust. Mostly I just trust that they're always changing and there's not much I can do about it. So I think when we, you know, with all of the, you know, culture around Dharma and practice, it's like, yeah, mindfulness is important, but I think there's a lot. This is an opportunity to really see the richness of the Buddha's Dharma. And there's so much more going on than just sitting in the corner of a room for 20 minutes trying to bring awareness to our breathing. Nothing wrong with that. But really having to come to full terms with the ways in which we're creating moment-to-moment suffering in our thoughts and our perceptions and our feelings and our outlook. And whether or not we're creating a sense of refuge, not only for ourselves, but the people around us. And I'll say this before I take some questions, is that the one thing I love about refuge that people oftentimes don't follow it all the way to the end is that not only do we want to find refuge, but the more that we practice, the thing that's so beautiful about our interdependence is as we progress in the path, we start becoming a refuge for somebody else. We start becoming a beacon of hope and safety. And, you know, our Dharma practice, I don't know if you've noticed this, some of you have been doing this for a long time, it's very contagious. In fact, I would probably argue that many of you who got into this practice were inspired by somebody else you knew who's had this contagious, like, what are you doing? You seem like you really got it going on. And they're like, well, I've been meditating and going on retreats or whatever. It's a very beautiful opportunity for us to just not create this terrible student-teacher dynamic, but this really Kalyana Mitta dynamic of like, your practice can really become a refuge for somebody else who really is lost in fear and lost in all this stuff. And we all, as a kind of Dharma community, a global Dharma community, have this really beautiful opportunity to become the island that other people can at least hang out on for a little while. Like, hey, everything's going to be okay. Come on over. I'll make you a cup of coffee. Whether you're, you know, FaceTiming somebody or emailing somebody or getting on Facebook, you know, social media is kind of a beautiful thing right now. You know, how can we actually be beacons of hope and refuge and Dharma rather than contributing to the confusion and the fear and all of the ways in which this can be very destructive for our hearts and for our minds and for the way that we view things. So that's all some reflections on Dharma, you know, thinking about it as more than just a practice, but a perspective and a raft. And all these different ideas kind of point to this idea that it's the moment-to-moment refuge, the moment-to-moment sense of presence and ease. That's all you have anyway. All you really ever have is what's happening right now and how you're relating to it. And if we can really hearken ourselves to really, you know, buying into that, then I find that I have a lot more spaciousness and a lot more opportunity to be with the ambiguity, to be with the unknown in a way that doesn't feel overwhelming, but actually feels encouraging.
Recognition, acceptance, interest, and non-identification.
We learn to recognize awareness or mindfulness as an easeful and natural state of mind.